Welcome everybody to Dynasty 365. It is our Fantasy and Frames Wednesday. Guys, I have got Tyler Heil here. I've got Rich Sickles. And in the top corner over here, our very, very special guest joining us tonight to give us all the latest updates on the injury info for your favorite fantasy players. We've got the one and only Miss Stefania Bell from ESPN. Tyler, hit that music. Everybody, welcome to Dynasty 365, and a very special welcome to our guest, who is without a doubt one of the most fabulous guests we have had here on 365. Stefania, how are you doing?
I'm good. It's a very fun time of year, right? NFL draft is very exciting, and this year I think is going to be really interesting. A lot of times there's just a formula of what's going to happen. You kind of have an idea of how it's going to go, but I think we can have drama as early as pick number two. So
I know I can't wait. Guys, make sure you are following Stefania. I'm sure everybody who's listening is, but you're at Stefania_ESPN.
Yeah, it's correct.
Excellent. Excellent. Guys, you know her. She is the premier injury analyst at ESPN, the co-host of Fantasy Focus on ESPN, which was the very first fantasy football podcast I ever started listening to a few years ago. And so, Stefania, thank you so much for sharing your evening with us.
Well, thank you for the invite. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Guys, everybody in the chat, if you are listening, watching us on YouTube, please throw your questions in, throw your comments in. We'd love to see all the interaction in the chat as always. Tyler, you've got some kind of breaking news for us?
I do. Breaking ish, we'll say. Yeah. So J.K. Dobbins has recently signed with the Chargers. I know I received a lot of trade offers trying to get me to overpay for him. So that definitely happened. But he was cleared for a return to football activities in March. So Stefania, I guess what we're wondering is what exactly does that mean? He has such a massive injury history, seemingly every year of his career. Can it be something different in a different place, or are you still very concerned about his injury history?
So there's a lot to unpack there. let's just start with, actually, you ask a good question about what is cleared for football activity means, because I think people hear that and they think, okay, like they're full go, unrestricted, there's nothing going on. And that's not really the case. There's the medical clearance that happens to participate in football related activities. And that's what he has. But that doesn't mean that he goes out and participates in everything all at once. And, you know, as you can see, this clearance is coming early before spring OTAs start. And that in that way, it allows him to participate in some of the activities with the team. And it will really be up to the staff there what they include him in. But the idea is to bring him back gradually. I mean, he is coming off an Achilles repair. For people who might not remember, he tore his Achilles week one. It was the season opener. Had surgery September 15th. So if you look at, like, he's past the 6-month mark, that's kind of a significant point for Achilles injuries. And he had posted a video. We saw him doing some running. So we knew he was doing, some kind of running. But coming off Achilles repairs, it takes a while, particularly for running backs, receivers, to get power and explosiveness back. And that is what you want to build towards as you're working your way through football activities. So they're certainly making it sound like he could be ready to start the season, but we don't really know what he's going to look like. The hardest thing to get back after an Achilles repair is your power. So you can be doing a lot of things, but getting explosiveness, any athlete who's had one will tell you that's the hardest thing to get back. So it may take a while for us to feel like he really looks like who he was before the injury. And you mentioned his history. We didn't get to see much of J.K. Dobbins looking like who he was because he had the ACL injury previously. That was in 2021 preseason. And when he came back, if you guys recall, when he came back in 22, he struggled a bit, and he really didn't have, he had some stiffness in the knee, and they ended up going back and doing a second surgery during the season, freed up some scar tissue. And then he really looked good when the season was closing out, which is why I think everybody was so optimistic about how 2023 would be for him. But he came into the league in 2020. He's only played 24 games in that time. And he's had two significant injuries, one to each side. It doesn't mean he can't have a successful career after this, but I think it's hard to know what that looks like. And that's going to be the challenge. You know, in dynasties, you're trying to evaluate, like, what am I going to get productivity wise? I'm not basing it on what he used to be, on what J.K. Dobbins was, and certainly not in this year. We are starting to see some guys come back from Achilles injuries. It used to be kind of the death sentence for a running back, but Deontay Foreman had an Achilles injury several years ago. A lot of people have forgotten about that because he put up his best year when he was with the Panthers, and that was after he had that injury. So people are definitely turning this around. But given J.K. Dobbins' history, given the things you were drafting him for, which was power, was, you know, one of his skill sets, you're really going to need to see what that looks like. I mean, he's back with Gus Edwards now. They're playing under Greg Roman. There are a lot of things that are, like, it's a nice landing spot for him. But I'd have a hard time imagining him being a total workhorse there, especially when he starts.
Absolutely. And are you trying to acquire J.K. Dobbins at all in any of your leagues?
Thank you. I mean, I'm rooting for him. This is really hard. I always feel badly because I'm always rooting for these guys. I love when they defy expectations. He was in one of the best places he could be to rehab. He was out in L.A. He's one of, you know, I think Aaron Rodgers called it the Achilles factory out there, you know, where everybody, they were working together, and they have a very good program there, good surgery, solid rehab program. So I really like his ability to come back and play and have success. But I'm on a, like, I want to see what he does this year. And I'm not, I wouldn't be counting on him this year. So for me, depending what you could navigate, if he is on your roster and you are looking to move him, I would be seeing what people might be willing to offer you. You could sell it as a really, you know, look, he's already been cleared. He's going to be ready to start the season, it looks like. A lot of potential there in that offense. You don't know what Harbaugh's going to do. You know, like I said, it's a good landing spot for him. But for me personally, I'm looking elsewhere.
Nice. And it, you know, I'd appreciate if you could send me that entire sales pitch in an email. That would be awesome.
Yeah, what you need to find out is if anybody listened, and then don't go to those people. Yeah. Or, you know, go to, I mean, look, not everyone's going to agree with me. And I, like I said, he could prove me wrong. This is the thing, is that this stuff is so individualized. Like, you're just, it's risk stratification, right? But what we typically see with people coming off Achilles repairs is there is a buildup. You have to accumulate some volume of work before you really look like you have power. And if you're smart, and hopefully the Chargers will be, you're not overloading him early on because you don't want to do that to the athlete. So just volume of work for you, if he's on your fantasy roster, like, you can't count on that early on.
Absolutely. And I don't think they're done adding to their running back room either.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, so speaking of, we've got the draft on Thursday. I want to talk about a couple of rookies that, you know, maybe have some injury, you know, question marks next to them. I think the biggest, the most obvious, Michael Penix, you know, four serious season ending injuries. I mean, obviously that's his biggest question mark heading into the draft. I was just wondering if maybe you could talk about, like, the potential risk that a team is taking with a player with his kind of history. And is that history something that we should legitimately be concerned about, you know, as dynasty players? Is he somebody that we should be looking at to draft, you know, in that, you know, kind of format if we're playing in dynasty?
So this is really interesting because if you look at his history, he I mean, everyone knows about it. He had this significant when he was at Indiana, these seasons that ended because of injury. And then he's had these 2 years at Washington where he's been able to get through the entire season without an issue. And he looks really good right now. So what teams are typically looking at, quarterbacks a little bit different, right? Because most people are paying high for a quarterback. And I'm talking about the actual NFL teams. When they're drafting, their draft capital is quite high on quarterbacks for obvious reasons. It's hard to find a hit in the quarterback, somebody who's really going to be a rock star. And you're basing you're trying to build entirely around that quarterback. You expect your quarterback to have staying power and not to be somebody who would be out after first contract, unlike other positions where teams are going, well, one, maybe two contracts. We've seen they kind of shift the way they look at running backs is they're trying to get them through their first contract, you know, rookie contract. So with Michael Penix, like, I don't have immediate concerns. I think what he's done the last couple of years is impressive, and he showed us that. Mm-hmm. But what happens if there's another problem with his shoulders, for one, because that we haven't heard too much about. So to me, it's interesting. You have to kind of put your clues together where you can. So a couple of interesting things with him are that everyone's talked about the two ACLs, and that's important because they were the same side, and that's a bigger deal, and we'll talk about that. But nobody's really talked about the shoulder. Mm-hmm. And when he got a letter from Dr. Neil Elatrosh, who's very well respected as somebody who's an NFL team physician and an MLB team physician, but there's a lot of second opinions and operates on a number of players around the league. When he puts out a letter like he did for Michael Penix before the Senior Bowl, kind of this open letter to teams. And this is not uncommon. Like, an agent will take their player to mm-hmm. someone who's well-respected like that and say, take a look at, even if they don't see the player in person, based on the scans, all the imaging that we're presenting to you in the history, what would you say? And so this came out that he really had no issues with regards to the knee, thought it looked great, et cetera. But there was nothing about the shoulder. So I find that interesting just by omission, right? We're not talking about the shoulder at all. It's really, he has not come out and said anything about it. So I have a little concern there, not in the immediate sense again, but what, you know, is there going to be a residual problem that's going to show up if he takes the wrong hit, if he lands on it wrong, et cetera. And then as far as the knee goes, it's really interesting because we don't have data on what we call revision ACL. So you have, when you tear your ACL twice, the second surgery is called a revision.
Okay.
And it has to do with the type of graft that they use. So most common, especially in the NFL, you see this bone tendon bone graft. Mm-hmm. And so they take a little bit of your patellar tendon, the front of your knee, and that becomes your graft for your ACL. Well, when you tear it twice, now you've used the graft on the other, you've used that tendon plug from the other knee. So if you were to tear it again, the choice of graft becomes a question mark, because inherently it's a little bit more concerning about what would they do to fix it. I know we're getting in the weeds a little bit, but this is how teams are thinking about making a decision on him. It's like, okay, even if he's good now, if this happens again, what becomes the potential consequence? And most people are not, they're not using cadaver grafts on these guys because they end up stretching out. They're not great. But quad tendon is something that's become more popular in sports medicine. The problem is sometimes you have a quad weakness after that. So that changes the game potentially of like, is this something that if it happens again, it's going to set him up to struggle? Mm-hmm. And that's what teams are evaluating. And there's not great, because it's not common, we don't have a number I can give you as far as like, what are the chances this happens? Mm-hmm. He could be fine. And I think the fact that he's played 2 years, that works in the plus column for him. He's not had issues with the knee. That works well. But I do think that there will be teams who will be concerned. And so for me, if I'm a dynasty player, I'm not, you know, unless I'm looking to balance out, like I play in a super flex dynasty league. And, you know, if I had good quarterbacks and I was trying to, you know, maybe get someone I could have early, because you might get a lot out of him and then might be looking to move him down the line. That would be a potential strategy. But I would think of it that way because there's risk.
Okay. That's crazy. I had no idea how they do the graphs and from the quad. That's so fascinating.
Oh, and yeah. And I'm giving like the, I mean, without getting totally into it, but that's why people like me get frustrated when it's like, oh, this is an ACL. This is how, what the outcome is. And it's like, well, there's all these different things that factor into how you're evaluating what an ACL injury looks like. And so it's tough because I feel for a kid like Penix who's really proven himself, and the recency bias, it should be positive for him. He has played 2 years without limit, but you can't ignore what came before because of what it is. And some of the, like I said, the omission of the chatter around his shoulder, I just would have liked more detail on that going into the draft.
Yeah.
Well, understandable.
Speaking of ACLs, I feel like that's going to be a pretty big theme.
always is.
Always, right? Rich, you had a question about one of the rookie running backs, right?
Yeah, I was going to say a perfect segue. Jonathan Brooks is somebody that I'm really, really interested in personally. I've been slowly moving him up my board, and I kind of want to take him at RB1, but I'm not quite there yet. And I was just wondering, what do you expect his timeline to be? And when do you think we could realistically see him on the field again and getting some real playing time?
Well, he said at the combine that he expected to be cleared for training camp. So I think if, you know, I don't think that's unreasonable. His original injury was November, I believe, of last year. So, you know, 9 to 12 months is about what we see for ACL injuries in terms of return to play. The hard part is you are jumping up to, you know, NFL level from college. It is different. The demands are different. And you're also, again, this is the running back wanting to get him through first contract kind of thing. So a team that's making an investment is going to be smart, you would expect. But what that means is you're probably not going to have as much volume of work up front, given that he's coming off ACL. So in the first year, even if he's ready to go, and everybody will say the right things, you know, he's participating in camp, or he's ready, he's cleared, you know. But I would expect that he's not going to be an RB1, at least not at the start of the season. If you look at kind of how the Jets brought Breece Hall back, and he's, you know, that's like the best. That's your ideal. That's your ideal scenario, is that you come off ACL, you look like that. Yeah. But if you look at his snap percentage and the number of carries that he had, his ball touches increased, his snaps increased across the first few weeks that he played. And he'd already had the benefit of playing as a rookie, at least until he got hurt. So he'd already been in the NFL. But coming off the injury, his volume of work went up. But he also played a lot more factor in the passing game. A lot of his rushing yards didn't come until the back half of the season. So I think a team, and now not all teams are smart, and some get carried away when they have a really exciting player, especially if he's performing well. So just understand, they did a study. It's been a while now, but looking at a player who came, you know, this was NFL players, rookies coming to the combine post ACL reconstruction had a 22% higher chance of a second ACL tear when they within the first 5 years. And so the risk goes up. It's just there. Whether it's the same side or the opposite side, the risk of another second ACL tear in the first, I can't remember if it's first 2 years or just within the first contract, but the risk is 22% higher. It drops, I think, to about half of that the second year. Once they get past the two-year window, it sort of levels off. But so there's some increased risk. And the other thing is secondary compensatory things that happen. Guys get hamstring pulls. You see that a lot post ACL, secondary soft tissue injuries. And that often comes from doing too much too quickly. So everything is about how is he when he gets to where he's going, how did they manage him and build up his workload? And then kind of what does that look like the first year? Unfortunately, if you're drafting him in Dynasty, you're going to have to make those choices before you have the luxury of having all that information. And, you know, I think he looked good. I was watching him, had my eye on him at Combine. I thought, you know, but I'm just watching him walk and I'm just kind of trying to eyeball his quad girth and things I could take in. I thought he looked great, but we're not doing anything yet. So, look, coming off ACL is getting more common, but it's still an individual thing. You're still rolling the dice a little bit. But if he comes off and is successful on the back half of the season, you might have somebody who's a rock star, you know, second year forward.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. Yeah. I was, like I said, I'm really wanting to move him up my boards, and that makes me understand a little bit more about the risk. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's it for our rookies. We've got a few questions about some of our vets here. This one's near and dear to my heart because I love Tank Dell so much. So much fun to watch last year. Tyler's giggling over here because I think like I built his bandwagon. I was like head of his fan club last year, but, and this is completely speculative question. So I'm sorry, but I mean, do you think the Stephon Diggs signing like says anything about how the Texans are viewing, you know, Tank Dell's recovery timeline and if he'll be ready for the season? I saw that floating around on the internet a little bit after, you know, the signing there. And I was kind of curious. I was like, I wonder what that means for Tank Dell. If it means anything, I mean, who knows, but.
I don't think it does. I think my tweet after I saw the Stephon Diggs signing was the rich get richer. I think Tank Dell will be fine. He was running full speed in March. He had a fractured fibula. Obviously, that's what ended his season. He was hoping to be cleared to participate in spring practice. Again, I don't necessarily think that means everything, you know, full volume of work that early, but he doesn't really need to do that early. I haven't heard anything negative about his recovery, and I'm operating from the point of view that I think he'll be 100% going into camp. So sometimes with that kind of injury, guys are a little bit stiff when they're first running, and you know, that's what you see, but I'm not overly concerned about it unless something manifests itself later. So I think Stephon Diggs was just, you know, they could get him and they did. And Now it's like just one more nightmare for everybody who I think I said, I almost feel bad for the rest of the AFC South because of how strong I think the Texans offensive weaponry is there. So I'm not worried.
Who would have thought we'd be saying that about the Texans? You know,
Not me. So, you
know. That was a quick turnaround.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, I think the only player Stacey talked more about than Tank Dell was Darnell Washington.
They did take D'Amico Ryans from me and my 49ers. So, you know, happy for him that he's there and having so much success. But I was sad that we lost him.
Yeah, he's been a great coach.
He has, and they just got done burning the Browns to the ground in the playoffs. So, you know, I'm not salty about it at all. No. But speaking of quarterbacks, well, we were talking about CJ Stroud and how well he did. Joe Burrow, should we be concerned about, I believe it was an injury to his wrist ligament. Should we be concerned about his injury, about him coming back, or does that typically have a high recovery probability?
So it's really interesting because I've seen different reactions from folks who kind of do what I do. And most people are like, oh, I'm not worried because this really has nothing to do with throwing. And I mean, if you get really into the mechanics of wrist and hand mechanics and throwing mechanics, you could make a case for that. My problem is just more vanilla, which is scapholunate ligament repairs, which is what he had, or that you just don't see them in quarterbacks. You don't, it's not a quarterback injury. Usually these injuries are caused by trauma, you know, fall on an outstretched hand. We see them in like defensive backs. We see them linebackers, you know, people who are getting either jammed at their wrist repeatedly and then fall. It's just not a quarterback injury. And my suspicion, I can't prove this, but my suspicion, that the report, if you watched when he was playing in that game, then his hand looked like it was killing him. He said he felt it on a throw. Like, that is not the way those things tear. He didn't just throw it and all of a sudden had this brand new injury that tore that particular ligament. I don't believe. I think what happened is at some point in his career, he fell or landed on his wrist hard, you know, got it jammed and then aggravate, you know, that ligament was already, it's what we call in medicine, acute on chronic. Like there's probably some chronic changes in the ligament and then it failed based on, whatever triggered it, whether it was games prior to that or that one game. But then when it failed, now you have a ligament you have to fix. And you have to fix it because you can get instability and then arthritis in your wrist there, which is obviously a bad thing, especially if you're a thrower. Mm-hmm. So the good news is that surgery will take care of it and should heal fine. But you're talking about a very tiny space. Like there's not a lot of room, a lot of ligaments in the wrist, not a lot of room. When you're adding surgical fixation and hardware in there, you are now taking up more space with that hardware. So you're adding stability, but it's really hard as somebody who's rehabbed some of these injuries before, it's hard to get 100% of your motion back. Now, will he get it all back or functionally get enough back to be able to do what he needs to do? Maybe, probably. I saw Joe Burrow rehab his knee and I was so impressed with how he came back from that. So I would put him in the category of like, I've seen his work ethic through rehab. What he did and where he was with his knee was beyond impressive. So he gets, like that tips the scale in his favor, but it's also like he's a thrower. It's what he does for a living. And this is now you're talking about surgery in that wrist. I don't know. I really don't know what to expect. I'm probably more anxious about it than some of the other people I've heard talk about it who are like, oh, it'll be fine. But the only time I heard him reference it, my colleague, Ben Baby, who covers the Bengals, was at one of these things where players appear and they're promoting something, product, and then you get a chance to interview them. And he asked him about it. And Burrow gave all, good information about why he chose the surgeon he did and where he was in terms of the rehab. But he was hoping to be fully cleared. He was hoping to be cleared to throw by spring and certainly fully cleared in the time leading up to training camp. But I'm like, I don't know what he's going to look like throwing. Like, I just don't know. And I want to see it. This is also, unfortunately for him, coming off the calf injury, which we know was tough and did not resolve well. I finally did right before the hand, but, that took a while. He had a significant thing going on there. I just, all of that has me a little bit concerned for him. I hate the word, I hate the term injury prone. It's just not something I like to use. The knee injury was a freak thing. That was a pocket collapse, knee dislocation because of contact. That was not a random, that's not because he had a weak ligaments in his knee. But the soft tissue injury with the calf, now the thing with the wrist, little concerned. I want him to come back and be, I love watching Joe Burrow play. I think he's terrific. I hope he comes back and it's nothing, but I don't know. And we don't see this often enough to say, oh yeah, quarterbacks come back from this with no issue.
I feel like he has like the worst luck of like any of the quarterbacks out there right now.
Like, he's got some bad luck. And it's like interesting. Like didn't we just hear today about T. Higgins requesting a trade? We've got, you know, he's got like him and Jamar Chase. That's special. But I kind of don't know. Joe Mixon's gone. This, like, what is happening and what is it all going to look like there? I just hope his wrist is fine and this is a non-issue, but this is why these conversations now are tough. And I feel, usually this is when people get frustrated with me because every single time I'm giving you a reason why it's hard to say definitively, this is what this is going to look like. But that's also the honest answer. And I think the folks who are dismissive of it, like it's no big deal. That's great to have that confidence, but we haven't seen it and we don't have a lot of comps to go by. So it's hard for me to be able to say that I have, you know, no concerns.
Yeah. No, understandable. Understandable. Sticking with quarterbacks and moving on to going back to Achilles, I should say. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask about Kirk Cousins, being the resident Minnesota Vikings fan here. Right.
Well, I'm really curious. You guys see tomorrow.
Right. Yes. Tomorrow is going to be so exciting. So exciting. I hope it's exciting anyways. Oh, yeah.
You have a new field surface in your stadium. So there's that to be happy about.
Right. Yep. Kirk Cousins, I was just wondering what you think as far as like the length of recovery time that he's had so far and everything. Should fantasy managers should there be any concerns for him, for drafting him and the skill players around him in the redraft this year? And then as far as dynasty managers go, are you worried at all? Should they be trying to trade him away right now, or do you think there's enough tread left on the tires for him to make a push?
So it's funny because I have not been the biggest Kirk Cousins fan, except for I play in the Scott Fish Bowl and every year I pick up Kirk Cousins because volume wise ends up being huge and consistency wise ends up being huge. And if he can do that in Atlanta, they are going to be something else. Now, like this could be the key to what they've really needed. And, you know, he's there. I think his wife's from there. Like everything, all these things that line up really nicely for him to have a great year. But yeah, he's coming off an Achilles injury. Now, you could say, and it's funny to me that when he got traded to the Falcons, I heard zero concerns. Like, there was nothing, you know, everybody was like, this is great. This is awesome. He's going to go to the Falcons. And I was like, does everybody remember he just had an Achilles repair and we haven't really seen him do anything? And it's interesting because I think it was his right Achilles. So, we talk about Aaron Rodgers and everybody was really worried about him, but it was his front leg, which is really not, it doesn't require much of your Achilles other than, you know, moving around, escaping pressure, et cetera. But if it's your back leg, you do get some pop from your Achilles to help you throw. And so having power in it or a lack of power, even though it might not seem like a big deal because we're not asking him to run sprints or look like the demands for J.K. Dobbins are very different than the demands for Kirk Cousins. So we're not talking about the same thing. But it's not nothing, you know? And if you want it, you can ask Dan Marino that question because he had an Achilles repair that stretched out and made it tough for him to play. And because he was Dan Marino and he had this crazy strong arm, he was able to get away with it. But there is that component that we don't fully know. Now, Kirk Cousins, it's not like we're necessarily asking him to throw bombs down the field. And in fact, with the offense that they have, he can be really effective playing the middle of the field as well, you know? So I'm not necessarily like, if I had him in Dynasty, I'm not getting rid of him because there's too much upside from all of what he is surrounded with. you know, and I don't, it's not like you think, oh, the surgery is going to fail, like re-tear. It's not that worry as much as what's he going to look like when he plays. He needs protection. You don't want him to get hit a ton. You don't know how mobile he's going to be. He's not really ever been a super mobile guy, but that's not been a problem for him. So it really depends on where you are sort of in your balance of your fantasy roster, because they're expecting him to finish out his career. That was part of the deal, was he got this long-term, you know, setup there. But that's a very hard one for me. Like, I'm not looking to go out and acquire him now, but I think if I had him, I would sit tight, because I think there's no reason to give him up, certainly not for an unknown entity, you know?
Yeah.
I think I would be gambling on the side of what's the word? Optimism, you know, for how it looks for him in Atlanta. But of course I naturally have to have a little bit in the back of my head, because we don't know. We haven't seen him throw yet, but I will say this too, you know, where he was in Minnesota rehabbing, you know, after he had his surgery, they're really, really good there. So I think the early critical part of his rehab was really good, and that helps him going forward.
Good. Well, we have a question in the chat from Tizzy Pop, Rachel. Mm-hmm. There it is. She wants to know, what about Anthony Richardson? I'm glad that she put this in here, because I was kind of wondering about that. And there, we have kind of a similar question a little bit later on, but like, I was kind of wondering, is he doing any kind of things during the off season similar to maybe like what Tua did, like learning how to take hits a little bit better and protect himself, maybe just so he doesn't have that, you know, worry, concern about getting injured, you know, this coming season. I was just wondering about that. I'm so glad that Rachel put that in the chat.
Yeah. I don't know that. I mean, I don't think he's doing something like what Tua did, but what I can tell you, number one, he looks so good throwing right now, like way better than I thought he would. At this point, given the injury that he had an AC separation that was significant, had to have a surgical repair, which can be problematic for a thrower if you don't have a good recovery. He actually works with Tom Gormley and his group down in Jacksonville, Florida. And I was just down there. I was down there with Caleb Williams and Brock Purdy a couple weeks ago. And Anthony Richardson works with Tom as well. He just wasn't there the time I was there. But I saw a video of him throwing, and I know how good, like, he looks really good, making throws that I did not expect right now. And I think, in addition to just the rehab element of it, part of what they do down there is they're very focused on mechanics and efficiency of throwing and all that. And if you recall, when Anthony Richardson was coming out into the draft last year, a lot of the criticism was on, you know, he's only started 12 games in college. And all the naysayers were kind of like evaluating him based on what this college product was. Yeah. And one of the things I like about what they are doing with this group in Jacksonville is they're very much like believers in, like baseball pitchers, that you can evolve your throwing over the course of your professional life. Like, you're not where you are when you come into the league isn't necessarily the end all be all of where you should be and shouldn't be. And if you watch Anthony Richardson in the sixth, I think he got injured in his sixth game, but I think if you watched him, people were like, oh, hey, like, you know, they saw things that they were, that showed that he had a lot of promise in the league. And I think that approach for him is part of what is ultimately going to help him maybe not be at so much risk for injury. I do think there's a bit of a lesson that happens, and he, you know, before his shoulder, he had a concussion. He had something else. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think there's, you know, there's some education in that. So that all speaks to how can you be the most efficient and do what you need to do to protect yourself. So he is my quarterback in my dynasty league, and I am not looking to move him if that helps in any way.
So we are holding on to Anthony Richardson.
Oh yeah. And I expect very good things from him.
Awesome. All right. One last question about our vet players before we kind of get to into our last topic here. And this definitely comes from our resident Commanders fan, Jorge. has a question about Terry McLaurin and his turf toe injury from last year. Just kind of wants to know, you know, what kind of recovery process is it when you've got a turf toe injury? And then if you develop one of those, you know, is there a risk of re-injury, or does that give you kind of like a higher, are you more prone to it essentially, I guess, is what the question is going to be asking. So Terry McLaurin, turf toe, Jorge, we got it in there for you.
It's all scalable. You know, so minor turf toe injury could be nothing more than a mild ligament sprain. It's basically the ligaments underneath the ball of your foot. And it's a complex there. So ligament, there's this fibrous plate called the plantar plate that's underneath there. You got a couple little sesamoid bones in the ball of your foot, and that's a little tendon pulley system. There's all these things that are working together there so that you have good push off when you're running. And a mild turf toe injury, not a big deal. But if it's more substantial, number one, it's harder to recover from. Number two, if you start to get some instability in the joint because it doesn't heal quite right, or you re-injure it, it leads to instability. That's when you start getting into problems. Because if you get instability there, you have to get it fixed. If you don't, like Deion Sanders is the extreme case of turf toe gone bad that ended up being career ending. And you know how many problems he has with his feet now. And that's all a result of that injury. And so if you get that bad, you need it reconstructed. His was mild, and mild enough that, you know, we saw when McLaurin started the season last year, I think he only had 2 catches in week 1, but then it went up to like 5 and then 6 and 8. And so he was progressing at right, you know, and pretty quickly, like right by week 2. And he played all 17 games. So I think the fact that he was able to play as much as he did and really didn't have any lingering issues, it's not a huge flag for me going into this year. It's always possible that he re-injures it, but it's not a huge concern just because of how well he did for the rest of the year.
Awesome. I love Terry McLaurin. So that makes me happy. I know that makes Jorge happy to hear. We've got a couple just general injury kind of questions for you. And then we will wrap up so that the Fourth and Frames guys can go on at 9. But Rich, you want to know about the kickoff rule, right?
Yeah. I'm just really curious about whether or not it should lead to fewer injuries on kickoff. The NFL reported that concussion fell by 60% in 2023 following the rule change. And we're just wondering if we should expect those numbers to fall more in 2024.
Yeah. So the concussion injuries are down overall, but they not on kickoffs. So kickoffs have a double the injury rate of a run or a pass play, and they have 4 times the concussion rate of a runner or pass play. And so that's a lot of what led them to look specifically at kickoffs as something to target, because the rate of injury and the rate of concussion injury was so disproportionate to other types of plays that they wanted to do something specifically about kickoffs. And the injury rate, like the injuries in total, dropped because kickoffs were not returned as much. So if you look at the rate of kickoff return, it was 22% of kicks were returned last year. And if you go back a decade, they're returning at like 88%. Right. So the feeling was, not only do we have this high injury risk, you know, and even though the number dropped, it was to them because kickoffs dropped in total, but the rate of the injury remained the same. That makes sense. So it was still as problematic of a play when it came to the injury rate for that type of play, but it did two things. The number of injuries associated with the play, but the injury rate didn't change, and kickoffs just became something that you weren't seeing returns on. So it became automatic that you get these touchbacks all the time. And that was boring for the game. So they were like, what can we do to bring back something that makes it more exciting? So it's not just it's not a given that we're just going to have a fair catch and there's going to be nothing here. How can we make the play more interesting and do it in a way that's safer? And that's what led to this idea of the new kickoff rule. And I think with moving touchback to the 30, you're going to see more returns. And the hope for them is that the injury rate levels out to what you would see with any other play.
And was there data on that from, I can't remember if it was the XFL or the USFL or the UFL that did it. I know they had the same rule. Was there injury data from that league that they kind of based this off of?
Yeah. That was exactly it that they saw. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but that was one of the reasons they did it, was to try and introduce a play. You know, they basically, the NFL benefited because they got sort of proving ground through, I think it was UFL, or maybe it was XFL. now you got me confused. Now,
well, the XFL is the UFL now.
It is the UFL now. It was the
XFL. I don't know.
Yeah. But it's actually really, I don't know if you've watched it at all, but I have specifically for that reason. Just the main thing is it's physics, right? You got guys coming from far apart, running at high speeds, big eye, and hitting each other, and those collisions are dangerous. And it's rare that you have something, even though these guys are running and hitting each other all the time, this is something where you have this buildup speed. And somebody who's paying attention to the kick, or even guys who are off ball, you know, looking in another direction, it's a lot of those kind of hits that were problematic. And so when you have people in much closer range, you're not likely to see that. Number one, the momentum buildup isn't there. And number two, it's a lot easier to sort of assess what's happening with the other people because they're not out of your field of vision.
Interesting. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, because it got boring, right? All year, like, okay, it's just going to be fair caught, kick out of the end zone, here go. And now it's like, okay, people, you want to disincentivize that by making it more, more interesting for these guys to try and return kicks.
Absolutely. So we did have one more question in the chat. It was regarding Mr. Javonte Williams. I know he didn't have like major injuries last year, but he was very clearly banged up. So is there any information on how he's kind of recovering and if he's going to get back to his old self that he was before that knee injury in 2022?
Yeah, he's one where I really felt like last year he came back so soon. And I know that the chatter was he looks good and they were going to bring him back. And, they kind of progressively increased his work. But it just felt his injury was really bad, like worse than I think people thought it was. And so after the surgery he had, I was just surprised that it wasn't longer before he was, you know, elevated to that level of work. Now, I'm not right there. I mean, they have reasons for doing what they're doing, but, and a lot of times the players are pushing for it too, because in their mind, they're always thinking, if I'm not out there and I'm not doing this, then that's a problem for me. And some of the subtleties in terms of the difference in how they're able to play with a couple more months under their belt versus coming back a little sooner, it's hard to see, but it shows up in the metrics. And I think then on top of it, he did, I kept trying to remember what he had. It was another soft tissue injury sort of dotted in there in the middle of last year. But, I haven't heard much, to be honest, about like the details of what his off-season work has been. But given the type of injury he had, a lot of times those guys are better the second year. So I would anticipate that, you know, another off season, kind of getting through that year and not coming off of surgery, you know, major surgery coming into this year, I would feel better about him than I did last year.
Well, so Ian, hang on to him if you got him in Dynasty.
Yeah, he's too much of a talent here, but you know, this is hard. This is why this is why it's so tough for these guys. After, you know, people think that, well, they're not going to make it. They're not going to last. They're not going to get through this contract, you know.
Especially with running backs, and you know, with them not, you know, having so much trouble getting that, you know, really lucrative second contract. So, you know, you can definitely see why he would want to be out there, you know, as soon as possible.
But then if your metrics are down, it doesn't necessarily help you make a case for your second deal either. They're kind of damned if they do and damned if they don't, I think. I've been a big apologist for running backs, and I would like to see them have only 3 years before they can, you know, get a new deal as opposed to five. I think that's my personal, you know, flag for running backs. Yeah.
Got to be a more creative way to help them because they're by far the lowest paid position. It's wild.
Yeah. Relative to what I think their value is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mr. Scampers has put two questions in the chat, and I feel bad. So if not asking it, so real quick, and because there is a Nick Chubb jersey hanging behind Tyler's shoulder over here, if you could maybe give us a Reader's Digest version of Nick Chubb's recovery process and what you know about where he's at right now in the process.
Yeah, he had two surgeries. His injury was horrible, obviously. What he had, a helmet basically to the front, kind of angular, going backwards, like a hyperextension with an angle, and really needed, he had a meniscus repair and, you know, major ligament repair as well. So they staged it is what they did. They did part of the procedure at one point, and then I think it was 6 weeks later, they did the second part. So slower recovery from that. It's a tough rehab. And he also had that blowout of that same knee when he was in college. It was amazing that he has become the runner he has in the NFL after dislocating his knee in college. And so I have to admit, when I saw this injury, I just kind of thought that might be the end for him. But he's also unbelievable. And so I think he'll be back. That's his plan. I do not think he'll be back to start the season. I'm looking at, you know, I think they're eyeing maybe the second half of the season, but this is a longer term thing. He means a lot to Cleveland. I think they're going to give him every opportunity to get better, and nobody's going to rush him back from this. I would not put much stock in what he can do this year. And if you're just looking for it, I love Nick Chubb. I think he's like the best pure runner in the NFL. But I think if you're looking for dynasty purposes,
try to grab Deontay Foreman.
Not feeling great. I mean, might he come back and surprise us all? I hope so. I hope he does, because I'm rooting for that. But
yeah,
he might not ever be an RB1 again, just the injury he had. And certainly not this year.
Yeah, man. Well, hopefully he does come back, because he is a great guy. I think everybody, he's just one of those players that everybody just loves, you know, and especially just loves rooting for. So hopefully, you know, he'll be back at some point. But Stefania, thank you so much for spending your evening with us. I appreciate it so much. Guys, at Stefania_ESPN, make sure to go follow her online. So you can get updates on all the latest injury news, fantasy focus on ESPN. Stefania, tell everybody, you know, where else they can find you on ESPN, if there's anything that you're working on that we should be on the lookout for.
Yeah, well, if you didn't see the piece we did on Brock and Caleb training down in Jacksonville, that is up on ESPN.com right now. You can find it if you kind of just, if you search Caleb Williams on ESPN.com and our draft stuff, you'll find it. And so that story, we hope to do an even bigger feature as we get into training camp and on that. The field surfaces thing, if you're interested in that topic, I wrote a big piece on that. We have a feature coming later this year, coming into the season, on the whole debate on all the field surfaces, which is much more complicated than just grass versus artificial. So I would say please take a look at those couple things. And then, yeah, you know, we have had a little bit, you know, just limited fantasy focus episodes, but that will start to pick up again, and there will be more of our stuff up on ESPN.com in the interim. So, and we'll see what happens after the draft. I have a feeling I'll be talking about some of these guys somewhere. So
I can't believe we didn't even get any field service questions. Cause after you said that, I was like, now I have so many in my head, but that is the show for another day. Everybody make sure you have given us a like, subscribe, so you can get notifications of when we're on. The Fourth and Frames guys are coming up next. They have got a lot of fun stuff for you there. Enjoy the draft, everybody, this week. We will be back with some great guests the rest of the summer and some more post-draft info for you next week. And everybody have a great night. Thanks for watching.